Welcome into Friends with Fantasy Ben podcast. I'm your host of the Keenan Friends podcast today, Ben Brantz. Joined today.
I am good, Ben. What about you?
Doing good. You know, just ready for another weekly show. We got some more pitchers to talk about. You know, we always love talking pitching on this show. It's the most fun thing about fantasy baseball.
Also the most frustrating.
Well, yes, I guess you could say that, Ray, but I would have thought that trying to get Evan Peterson on this show is the most frustrating thing.
No, I think really, if we're going to be honest, I think he's trying to trade with you.
No, that's not true. You know, I'm a master trader. I am a trade master, sir. I wheel mass dealings. That's my team name, Wheeling Mass Dealings.
Beating people into submission.
Just verbally.
Yes, we do not condone violence here.
Yeah, we don't condone violence, just verbal abuse.
Not bullying is bad.
Cyberbullying is a terrible thing, right? It's terrible. We shouldn't ever do it. Unless it's Colin Weatherwax. Then we can do it.
Definitely acceptable.
Hey, Colin, how you doing?
Look at that lead-in.
How's it going, guys?
Good. You have you been here long, Colin? I didn't know you were on the line.
No, I've just been listening in, you know, just taking notes on some things that I can call you out on Twitter if I need to.
Have you ever actually called me out on Twitter?
I think I have before. It was probably something either about the Mets or probably one of your trade offers. I mean, I could just go on and on. It could be a number of things.
Oh, like you telling me to take Jay Bruce this year. Yeah, that was a great one. Or telling me to not trade Cano for Trevor Bauer. Thanks. I appreciate
it. Oh, yeah. Anytime. I mean, anything that'll benefit me.
Well, then of course, right, he comes up to me yesterday out of nowhere. He's like, you probably should have traded Cano for Bauer.
Literally yesterday, I did send him that message.
But, I mean, in fairness, did you really think Cano was going to get hit by a pitch and then subsequently get suspended?
I didn't think that, but this was like a couple starts into the year, like five starts, and Bauer had shown good numbers. And I just didn't think that Cano was going to be a top 75 hitter. And I thought that him as a top borderline top 75 guy would be similar to Trevor Bauer. Bauer was a consistent top 30 guy, and I was worried. I had him as like 35 to 40. I wasn't sure if he was going to fully make the jump. And as the season kept progressing, the offer was still out there, and he kept looking good after every start. Colin's like, no, Trevor Bauer sucks. So I was like, all right, I trust Colin's opinion. And
let's put it in context. I said he's terrible on Twitter.
You just think he's terrible in real life. You said he's
definitely terrible on Twitter.
A terrible starter. I don't want him. I hate him. That's what you told me.
Fair. That is fair.
I am not drafting Trevor Bauer on Twitter.
And to be fair, it's my team. You know, I got to make my own decisions. But, you know, I do like to get other people's opinions. And I do a lot of moves without consulting people. And obviously with certain things that are borderline, I like to consult people. And this was one of them. And I probably should have done it. So, you know, it's a little disappointing. Because after I had to finally decide to do it, the guy's like, oh, I don't know. I'm starting to think that Bauer is better. And then I was like trying to offer stuff. And then Cano gets hurt like a day before the guy says that he was going to strongly consider my newest offer. Cano gets hurt and he's like, I want no part of him. Then suspension happens. He tries to buy low by offering like some reliever for him, like Gisele. I think he offered like Gisele for Cano. I was like, I'm good. Thank you. So, but Ray, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter at Ray_Kuhn_28.
And what about you, Colin?
I'm at CWeatherwax13.
And I am at BBrancFWFB. Today, guys, we are going to be talking about some players that we are looking to either instantly plug, we're looking to stream, or we're looking to drop. Now, these are players that have been either decent this year or are underrated, or players that may even be more owned than they probably should based on some name value. And we'll give a little bit of insight, and we will go from there. So why don't we...
This is also considered the pop lock. Drop it, Ben.
Yes, yes, in favor or in honor of our friend Evan Peterson, who no longer seems to want to partake with us on our shows. It's very sad, very sad. But anyway, Ray, why don't we start with the first player who you have, and that's Chase Anderson. What is Chase Anderson for you? Is he someone who you would instantly plug? Is he a streamer, or is he a droppable pitcher?
For me, he is a droppable pitcher. I mean, I know you just stuck with him while he was temporarily on the DL, but I am sorry, Chase. At this point, I'm most likely going to say goodbye to you. I know you did well last year, 2.74 ERA. Shark had 8.47 guys per nine innings, and you picked up 12 wins. Brewers currently have the best record in the NL, but a little deeper dive. Your xFIP was 4.33 last year, but then going back to this year, all right, yeah, 3.86 ERA, looking good. 4-3 record, 9 starts, all right, fine, so you're in there on decisions. Okay, I like that. And then we get to the strikeout rate, 5.79. To me, 5.79 strikeout rate, I think you're going to fall behind if you have too many starters that are failing to strike guys out. And then we take a look at the FIP, 6.01, and the next FIP of 5.34. He's walking a little over 3 guys per 9 innings. He's only getting 34.9% ground ball rate, and his BABIP is just 200, so you know that's due to rise. So for me, there's not a lot I like about Anderson. All right, yeah, on the surface, some of the surface sets do look good, but I'm going to be most likely too worried to start him most weeks. So, therefore, I would drop him.
What about you, Colin? What are your thoughts on Chase Anderson?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Ray here. I think with Chase Anderson coming into the season, a lot of people were chasing the wins. They were chasing a possible breakout or a possible piggyback off of his great season last year, like you alluded to, Ray. But just this year, you know, he hasn't shown anything that he showed us last year. I mean, like you said, he's barely striking anybody out. He did have a DL stint, and that might have had something to do with it. But, you know, pitching in Miller Park this year has been his enemy. I mean, he's given up 16 runs in, I think, less than 30 innings pitched there. And that includes 9 home runs. So whenever, you know, that's your home ballpark, you're going to get most of your starts there. You know, that's a big red flag for me. He has looked better on the road, only giving up 6 earned runs with a 2.19 ERA. So it might just kind of be like the home bug for him. But without having the strikeouts, what is he actually going to give you in your stats? You know, you're chasing the wins. Yes, he's not going to give you strikeouts. The ERA is fluctuating. If the FIP, you know, holds up, he's going to be giving up a lot more runs than he has. And even though he's given up a lot of runs so far, so he's not someone that's helping me right now. And I think there's probably someone on the waiver wire that can give me at least some strikeout potential or give me some whip help or something like that, that Chase Anderson isn't providing right now.
Yeah, for me, I'm stuck in the spot where I'm either dropping him or I'm streaming him. I completely agree that the strikeout rate is horrendous, and his xFIP and his FIP are not something that I'm looking to have. He has a terrible ground ball rate of 34.9%. So it's a little tough, and he even has a Sierra 5.14. So it's a little tough for me to say, hey, this is someone that I want to have on my team. But it is like Colin said, he has had some decent road starts. If I had to pick, he's someone who I would probably drop because I'm not the type of guy who is going to be in a standard or smaller league that I'm interested in doing a matchup game. If it's a deeper league, obviously I'd consider it because he's the type of pitcher who has had a decent season and could turn around if things start to progress correctly. But if he doesn't, then he's someone that I would have to consider streaming in that type of format. But in a medium to small size league, he's someone who I'm dropping. All right, why don't we move over to Colin's first player, and that's Miles Mikolas. Colin, what are your thoughts on this player? Is he someone who you would drop, plug, or stream?
So for Mikolas, I think I'm going to plug him in for the rest of the season, which is very surprising. I mean, coming into this season, I wasn't on board with the hype train of Miles Mikolas. I mean, I saw him in Texas 4 years ago, and I was not excited about him. But you know, coming back over from Japan, it looks like he has changed a lot of his deliveries. He's changed a lot of his velocities and everything. And the big thing for me is the Cardinals' rotation. So we already know about the Wainwright issue, and now he's on the DL, so we don't have to worry about him taking up a spot. But they have these three rookies, Flaherty, Reyes, and Weaver. And everything that I'm hearing is those three guys are competing for two spots. So it doesn't sound like they are ready to let go of Mikolas. They basically have him solidified as their number two or number three starter whenever Carlos Martinez gets back. And, I mean, they should. I mean, basing it off of his stats so far, he's been excellent. I mean, he's only given up a 1.5 ERA at home. He's given up no home runs at home. And, you know, even whenever he goes away, yeah, he's given up six home runs on the road, but he only has a below 3 ERA. And like we said about Chase Anderson, he's not really striking out a lot of people, but he's helping with your ratios. He's helping with your ERA no matter where he's pitching right now. And, you know, based off of his peripherals, I think everything's going to last. And the biggest part for him was solidifying a roster spot, and it seems like he's done that.
Yeah, at this point, I agree. I don't think Mikolas is coming out of the rotation. And I mean, for me, he's probably in my top five of guys that I was absolutely wrong about going into the season. I was not a fan of Mikolas. I watched his first spring training start against the Astros. I didn't love his stuff. It's like, all right, this guy's going to pitch to contact. He's going to get beat up. Obviously, as a 2.24 ERA and 6 wins and 9 starts, it's not necessarily the case. I mean, worst case scenario is his FIP is 324. It's 328. If he pitches to that for the rest of the season, I think everybody here and the Cardinals included would sign up for that any day of the week. He's walking less than a batter per 9 innings. So like Colin said, it makes up for the fact that he's only striking out 6.86 guys per 9 innings. And I know we try not to chase wins, but you have to also be strategic and looking for wins. And Mikolas has 6 wins and 9 starts, so to me, that's a big deal. He's averaging close to 7 innings a start, so that's another big deal to me. So, yeah, he's getting 52% ground ball percent. Yeah, I'm buying on Mikolas.
He's someone who I'm buying on and I'm willing to plug in. Obviously, the strikeout rate could be better, but when you're walking less than a person – a batter per nine, you're not going to complain. And the difference of his K-to-walk rate being 6 is fantastic. His BABIP is a little lower than normal, but you're not going to complain at 266 because even it goes up a little bit, and his ERA goes closer to his FIP. You know, having a 330 ERA is still going to be something that you would be extremely happy for, considering where you probably drafted him. The thing you worry about is his left on base at 85.6. Obviously, you would like to see that be able to be maintained, but obviously that is something that is also fluky. So if he's able to do that for the entire year, then you're very happy. If it drops down to 75, then you know you're still going to work with it, and I could see him finishing the year with a 1.15 whip, so his whip could get worse, but, you know, people have a low batting average, people have a low BABIP against him. So I do think that everything is pointing in the correct direction for him. There's not a lot that you really are unhappy about. He's obviously having 35.5% hard ball or hard contact percentage, and outside of that, there's not really a lot to be upset about. No, not a lot of line drive rate, good ground ball rate, and a pretty decent fly ball rate. So you're pretty happy with everything that he's doing. So why don't we move into the next player, and that's Garrett Richards. So, Ray, what are your thoughts on Garrett Richards?
I am going to stream Richards. I think there, to me, first thing is, so far he's healthy. So that's obviously a good thing. He's striking out just about 10 batters per nine, so I like that. Conversely, he's also walking 4 batters per nine. His career is 3.21, so you hope that he improves a little bit in that department. He has a 3.31 ERA, so on the surface, yeah, that's fine. But 4.06 on the FIP. The problem is obviously the walks is a 2.67 BABIP, so you're going to expect some regression. But at the same time, his 65.8 left on base rate should normalize more to the 75% league average. So I think there's kind of room to work with both ways here on Richards. He has the backing of his strong offense with the Angels. To me, I'm going to stream. It's going to be like maybe like a two-thirds stream, really just to avoid some of those tougher American League lineups like the Astros, Yankees, Red Sox type of situation until he gets some walks under control.
Yeah, for me, Richards is someone who, as much as I like him, he's still someone who I'm probably streaming because he's just not able to get his walks under control at this point. I mean, yeah, you like the strikeout rate and everything that he does bring to the table. You like that he's finally being healthy after all of these years because he was just so impressive a couple years ago when he was, in fact, healthy. And he had that one fantastic year, and ever since then, it's just been injury, injury, injury. And you have to wonder if the walks and everything is just because his control isn't there, because he's had so much time off, or if this is just the type of pitcher that he is, that he's going to have a lot of Ks, he's going to have a lot of walks. But he's someone who, even though he has a decent ERA of 3.31, he still has a FIP of 4.06. He's giving up home runs at about a 16.7 home run to fly ball rate, so that's not great. And his left on base is 65.8%. So there's obviously some room for improvement, but he's someone who I would probably consider streaming depending on the matchup. What about you, Colin?
Yeah, for me, I'm probably on the same boat with you guys. I'm going to be streaming Garrett Richards moving forward. I do want to avoid the tougher matchups and then also the matchups where the batters are more plate disciplined and they'll take the walks because he's definitely issuing them out. So, you know, he does provide in the strikeouts. He could provide you a win here and there just because of the offense that's behind him. But I mean, he hasn't given up very many runs this year, which is a little bit surprising based on, you know, giving so many free passes. He's been a lot worse at home than he has been on the road. So that might go into my thinking of, okay, should I start Garrett Richards this week or should I start Garrett Richards against this theme? If he's in a good ballpark, and then also against a strikeout happy lineup or something like that, that'll sway my opinion to start him. But you know, based on his injury history, like you guys said, I'm just glad that he stayed on the field so far. And, you know, I think if you drafted him, you were expecting probably like a six-man rotation thing because they're probably going to limit his innings. And then also the Angels are rolling with a six-man rotation. So, you know, there's only so many opportunities to get Garrett Richards starts. So I want to definitely be weary of when I start him, but also take advantage of the matchup whenever it's given to me.
All right, why don't we move into the next player, and let's talk a little bit about Matt Boyd. Colin, what are your thoughts on Matt Boyd as of right now?
So Matt Boyd has been really impressive so far this year. You know, he was once a high-touted prospect with Detroit, and you know he's kind of living up to it, I think, so far. Right now, I'm still going to stream him. I'm not fully confident that he's broken out. He has shown that he's been a lot better at home with a 2.2 ERA compared to the road where he's at a 4.2. But I mean, just looking at, you know, the past few games that he's been that he's had, I mean, he had a 9 strikeout game, which was against Seattle in Seattle. That was impressive. And then, you know, the next game he went out against Minnesota, he walked 4 guys, gave up 2 runs, and didn't strike out anybody. So he's kind of a guy like Garrett Richards where you're going to have to play the matchups, where you're going to have to pick and choose where you use him. But he's someone that isn't getting a lot of the media attention. And, you know, he is a lefty who has a little bit of a funky delivery. So, you know, that there's always a chance that something can break right for him. And with a 3.29 ERA right now, his FIP is in line at a 3.44. He's barely giving up any home runs for his fly balls. He's at 4.3%. So, you know, he's someone that I want to stream right now. I'll definitely go pick him up, even if I won't start him his next start, if it's a bad matchup. But I want him to be on my bench, or I want to have him just in case this breakout is actually legit.
Yeah, for me, someone like Matt Boyd was someone who I was only considering in the very deepest of leagues coming into this year. You know, he's on the Tigers team who I believe most people in the fantasy industry, if not all, thought would be one of the lesser teams in terms of offense and defense and pitching because they just didn't have a lot of talented contributors. And for someone like Matt Boyd, he's going to be obviously continuing to pitch for a team that isn't going to get a ton of wins on the year. So if you're in a wins league, obviously this is someone who you may steer a little bit away from. But he has, you know, a 7.1 K per 9, which isn't great, but it's usable for someone at that spot. His BABIP isn't terrible. His left on base is right on league average. You'd like to see the improvements from his ground ball rate, which is roughly 6 or 7 points lower than where it has been for the last couple years. And the good thing about him so far is that he's just not giving up a lot of home runs at this time. So all the 5 balls that he is giving up are just not going out of the park. I believe that once it gets warmer, that will change because his xFIP right now is a full run and a half higher than what his ERA is. So he's someone who, aside from trying to actually trade him, if I could actually get some value for him, he's someone who I'm looking to stream because there's going to be certain matchups that a team that has big power hitters, you may want to avoid starting him in matchups like that as the summer progresses.
And all right, to me, he's going to be probably more of a drop than a stream. I know it sounds crazy. I'm dropping a starting pitcher who has a 3.29 ERA. I say more of a drop than a stream because, yeah, I would stream him. And in certain leagues, certain settings, depending on how deep it is, whatever, it makes sense to stream him. But honestly, I think at this point it makes sense to essentially stream every American League Central starting pitcher or every pitcher that's going to face the American League Central other than Danny Duffy. And obviously pitchers in the AL Central are going to face the other 3 teams, essentially, if you take the Indians out of the equation, more so. The problem with Boyd, one of the problems with Boyd, is that he doesn't get to face his own team in the Tigers. And like Ben said, the 484 FIP, XFIP is a little frightening. I don't like that he only has a 4.3 homer fly ball rate. And he only has a 32.9% ground ball rate. So you know those balls are going up in the air. So as Ben said, it's going to get warmer. The ball's going to start to fly. And I think balls are going to go out, and I think we're going to see a 180 on Boyd relatively quickly. I mean, after all, he had a 5.27 ERA in 135 innings last year. So I'm not necessarily sure he's that much different of a pitcher from last year to this year.
Why don't we move into the next player, and let's talk a little bit about Jason Vargas. So, Ray, why don't we let you start with him?
All right. To me, Vargas is a stream. I mean, honestly, the guy could not have been any worse than he was first 3 starts of the Met. I mean, he got shelled. I think he gave up. I think he only lasted 4 innings against the Reds, and his ERA still went down 3 runs. I mean, he threw like 5 or 6 scoreless innings, I think it was his last start. And his ERA is still 9.87. So that just goes to show you how bad things truly have been for Vargas through his first 4 starts of the season. But he did get a win in his last start. Spring training, he broke bone in his non-pitching hand, but that meant he had to go on the DL. He had to pitch behind the screen for a little bit. Whether it matters, doesn't matter, whatever. I don't know how much we're really going to say pitching behind the screen as opposed to pitching without the screen, how much it really affected Vargas in his preparation for the season. I'm not sure anybody really knows, but Vargas, I don't know how much of it was an excuse. I mean, we know the Mets love to make excuses because the Mets are just the Mets. But Vargas' first half of last year was an all-star. Then he wore down, could call it because of inning, you know, extra innings because he had Tommy John surgery previously. To me, Vargas is one of those guys. He's a solid National League starting pitcher that's going to keep you in the game. He's going to strike out. Strikeouts aren't necessarily going to be there. So far, he's struck out 8.3 per 9 innings. His career mark is closer to 6, so you can't really count on him for strikeouts. He's going to have to bring the walks down closer to his career average of 2.68. But, I mean, he has a 404 BABIP right now. You know that's going to improve. The XFIP brings you down to a 516. So, still, 516 isn't in the area that I want. But I think in the right matchup, and I think as he gets more innings under his belt, he could be one of those valuable inning-eater guys that you could take advantage of 2-start weeks or decent matchups if you're chasing some wins.
Yeah, for me, someone like Jason Vargas as a Mets fan, he was absolutely terrible in his first few starts. And, you know, he didn't get a spring because of that injury and may have taken him a few starts to get back. But we've seen in the past that he can put some a string of starts together in which he can be fantastic and then he can just fall apart again. Obviously, he didn't lead the league in the American League in wins last year or tie for the American League in wins last year just by being a terrible pitcher. He obviously had some good luck bounce his way, and the Royals weren't a great team last year. They weren't a bad team, but you know they weren't one of those top tier teams. So obviously he had done something correct. He's the type of player who I'd consider streaming, and he's someone who I'm very much going to look into how the team that he's going up against hits lefties, how he is pitching, how hit the defense is, what the defense behind him on the given days, because the Mets, being the Mets, you know, they bring in someone like Jose Bautista. Sometimes they run terrible defenses out there. You know, there's plenty of times in which they could easily have a better defensive team than what they do. But with all that aside, he's someone who I'm looking to stream. He's someone who I'm not expecting a ton of strikeouts for, but he's someone who could get you a quality start even if he does go only 6 innings and give up 3 runs. He's still going to have, in a quality start league, he's still going to be able to get you those quality starts even if his whip is around 1.2 consistently for the year.
So, Ben, you said that Jason Vargas had a lot of good luck last year. What makes you think, as a Mets fan, that you're going to have, or he's going to have some more good luck this year?
He's going to have none. He sucks.
I mean, as soon as he was signed by the Mets, you knew he was going to have bad luck. And then what do you know? He goes and breaks his non-pitching hand.
I mean,
so,
to be fair, and I don't mean to interrupt you, we have had some success with older fat guys. So... You know, we did have
so that means I have. So that means I have a chance.
You do, right? You do. You may need to get a little taller, but outside of that, I think you should be good. I mean, you got that Bartolo Colon fastball at 70 miles per hour, so I think you're good.
Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah. So I'm actually going to drop Jason Vargas. I think he might actually fall in line with Greg Holland. How Greg Holland started off the year great last year. Tailed off towards the end. No one really wanted to sign him. Gets signed, and he's still showing the signs of wear and tear or just showing that he doesn't have it anymore. And I'm afraid that, you know, combined with being a Met, that's going to be the same thing that happens to Jason Vargas this year, and I don't really want any part of it. So I know that, you know, he had a pretty good start out his last time. He went 5 innings with no runs, 7 strikeouts, but it was against the Marlins. You know, give me someone against – You know, he pitched against Atlanta, gave up 6 runs. He gave up 4 runs against Cincinnati, 9 runs against San Diego. And if you give up 9 runs against San Diego at San Diego, then, you know, you're a Met. But he's not someone that I'm looking to own. I'm scared that he's going to fall off the cliff. And if he's going to fall off that cliff, I don't want him on my team.
Fair enough. Why don't we move into next player? Just going to be talking a little bit about Luke Weaver. Weaver is someone who I would try to pick up, and I'm probably plugging him into a majority of my lineups. Yeah, he doesn't have great numbers as you look at the standard numbers, but his FIP is much better than where he is. He has had some bad games in which he's been soft contacted to death. He's been unlucky in some games. Obviously, you would like to see him be able to keep up the strikeout rate that he's had for the last couple of games, not walk a lot of people. But I think that being on the Cardinals team, and as the summer warms up, the bats on his team will improve. You'll get someone like Yadier back. Someone like Ozuna should improve. Tony Pham at the top of the lineup and playing center field will provide you great defense. He has a very good defensive outfield. He has a good defensive infield. So as the summer gets going and players are healthier, I think that this is something that you should be able to see the benefits of, and you probably could get him off certain waiver wires. You probably could get him cheap, and he's someone that I'd probably plug in for the rest of the year. What about you, Colin?
Yeah, he's someone that you might be able to get cheap. I don't see him on any waiver wires that I'm in, but
yeah, I want to be in that league.
But you know, he has been really unlucky, and we all know that. You know, coming up this year, he was, you know, highly touted. There was just hope that a position would open up for him, and that's one of the things that I'm a little bit nervous about with the St. Louis Cardinals. As I alluded to before, they kind of have a set rotation with Mikolas, with Carlos Martinez, and then they're just looking to see, you know, do Weaver, Flaherty, and Reyes all make the, you know, make the rotation? And, you know, if one of them gets bumped out, as far as I know, you know, or as far as my opinion goes, it should not be Weaver, because, like I said, he's been very unlucky, and he should turn it around. And he, like I said, he is a top prospect. So, you know, as long as he can solidify that rotation spot, I think if you can buy low on him, he's someone that I want to plug into my lineups for the rest of the year, barring health. But, you know, just looking at, he's kind of like a blah pitcher. And I say that in a nice way because, you know, he has 8 per K per 9. He only walks, you know, a little bit under 3 per 9. So it's kind of boring. But yet there are some breakout games coming. There are some 8 strikeouts with no runs given up, you know, in some games, especially in the summer in St. Louis. So, you know, he's shown that before. He's shown that in the minors. He showed that coming up out of Florida State. And he's someone that I've had my eye on. You know, coming into the season, I had very high hopes for him. And as long as he can keep his rotation spot, as long as they let him go out there and pitch every fifth day, I think he's going to pay dividends for your team for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you. I'm buying on Weaver as well. I mean, for a young pitcher, he's still walking just under 3 batters per 9 innings, and he's striking out a little over 8. So, I mean, even the way it stands now, it's not terrible, but I think he does have it in him, like you guys kind of alluded to add a strikeout or 2 per game there. I don't love the 43.2% ground ball rate, down from 49.4% last year. That I don't love. The 8.8 home run to fly ball rate, that might come up a little bit. But, I mean, overall, 352 FIP, 402 xFIP. I think we're still looking at a solid pitcher. I like the team. And I think while he still has some developing to do, I think we've kind of seen enough from Weaver so far to know that he's a pretty solid starter. And, I mean, it was really just that one stretch where he gave up 6 runs in Wrigley, 4 runs to the Mets, 4 to the Pirates, then 4 to the Cubs again, that 4-game stretch that was really kind of, I think, what screwed him a little bit this year. And other than that, 3 runs to the Royals, 1 run to the Phillies, shut out the Padres, whatever, everybody should be able to do that. 2 runs against the Reds, 1 against the Diamondbacks, 1 against the Mets. So I think overall, the body of work, I do like Weaver, and I'm I'm going to buy, I'm going to pop him in. I don't think I'm going to be able to pick him up on waivers anywhere, but if I can buy low on him, it's definitely something I'd look to do.
All right, why don't we move into one of the last players that we have, and that's John Gray. So, Ray, what are your thoughts on John Gray?
Going into traditionally, I guess I should say that I'm never really a fan of Coors Field of Colorado pitchers. I always almost blanketly ignore them and just say, all right, that's it, done. I'm going to put my hands up. Coors Field, that's it. I'm starting pitcher. I'm going to avoid them. John Gray last year opened my eyes a little bit and was like, all right, maybe I'm missing something here. So now I was in on John Gray this year. Obviously, so far this year, John Gray's ERA is 5.34. So first knee-jerk reaction would be to say, all right, that's it. Screw it. I'm done. I'm dropping Gray. But no, that's not the case. I'm plugging Gray in. Because you do a deeper dive. His FIP is 3. His XFIP is 294. He's striking out over 10 guys per 9 innings. And his walks actually went down from 2.45 per 9 last year to 2.10 this year. He's given up a 371 BABIP. To me, I mean, I think Gray knows how to pitch. His stuff plays in Colorado with the velocity. He gets the ball down. I'm buying this anywhere I can. I'm not giving up on Gray. I hope people look at the 534 ERA and that he's a Colorado pitcher and that they stop looking.
What are your thoughts, Colin?
Yeah, for John Gray, I mean, actually, let me take that back. For all of the Colorado Rockies pitchers, they're all enticing on the road. I mean, every single one of them, you know, Tyler Freeman or Kyle Freeland, Tyler Anderson, you know, you name it, they're very enticing on the road. And John Gray this year, he started off very poor, and then he did some work with his mechanics, and then he had a really good three-game stretch where he struck out, you know, 25 guys over three starts and only gave up one run. But now his past two starts, one at home, one away, 6 earned runs and 5 earned runs. So he's a very frustrating guy to own, and he's not someone that's going to provide you with the strikeouts every time, because there was a game where he only had 1 strikeout and 4 strikeouts. So, you know, there's not always a consistent, you know, I'm getting this from this guy. And, you know, with the Colorado pitchers, it's a crapshoot if you want to play them in your lineup while they're at home. I mean, some pitchers have shown that they can, you know, throw a shutout. Like John Gray, he did that against the Angels this month. He had 8 strikeouts against them over 7 innings. And that's just Coors Field. I mean, sometimes you're going to get that. Sometimes you're going to get the blow up. So for Colorado pitchers in general, I like to plug them whenever they're on the road. John Gray is the best of the bunch in Colorado, so he's someone that I want to plug on the road. And if I start him whenever he's in Colorado, I have to know that I don't know what I'm going to get. I mean, you just can't say that you know where you're going to get unless it's a Max Scherzer, unless it's a Justin Verlander, you know, that's going into Colorado. You know, a middling pitcher, a guy that's just coming up, a guy that's trying to figure himself out, is always going to struggle in that high altitude.
Yeah, for me, I'm someone who owns John Gray in a few different leagues, and they're standard leagues. They're not too big, and there's times in which I don't want to have to start John Gray, but I feel because of the league size and it being a head-to-head, sometimes I'm forced to. But I think if I was in most leagues, I would consider streaming him, because it's like you said, Colin, when he plays in Coors, he's going to be BABIP'd to death. And obviously you can see that with a 371 BABIP for the season through 10 starts. Now, obviously, he does have a great FIP and great XFIP numbers, but you don't want to go up against like if the Yankees were in Coors for some reason, you're not going to start him, obviously, and not just because it's the Yankees, but because it's a big power team in general. A lot of teams that have home run hitters or have players that can sustain a high BABIP, you're not going to want to play him because he's going to be putting a lot of base runners on, and yeah, he's going to strike people out, and he's not walking a ton of batters this year, but you're still not going to want to be put into that situation in which he has a lot of people on base, because as of right now, he only is getting people that are left on base out at a 63.7% clip. And what you're not going to want to do is be put into a situation where you're expecting him to have a good start while he's at Coors and people are on base and he's just not able to get out of jams. So he's someone who I would likely stream, and when he's on the road, I'm probably always starting him.
I mean, part of the reason why I'm plugging him in is because I had him on my bench for the Angels start, and obviously he proved me wrong there. And the other thing is that he can get the strikeout, so he can pitch out of some trouble.
I have no issues with certain matchups at home, and like you said, Angels is one of them that I may have also benched him. I end up starting him in one, benching him in another, but that is the type of situation where I don't want to necessarily be put into a decision, because if you're at the end of the week or if you're looking for a championship game and you have to rely on him to get a good start or for him to not pitch and for you to maintain ratios, you're likely not putting him into that situation. And it's just because it's someone who you can't trust to always get the job done when he's at home. Why don't we move into the next player, and that's Masahiro Tanaka. So, Colin, what are your thoughts on Tanaka?
Drop him. Drop him now. He's useless. I mean, he has a 5 ERA. He has a 5 ERA, and there's no end in sight. I mean, he has a 5 ERA at home. He has a 4.91 ERA on the road. And, you know, he's given up home runs. He's given up earned runs. He's striking guys out, yeah. But, I mean, only at a 7.99 clip. So 8 guys per 9 innings. And, you know, the walks are only 2 per 9. So, but the biggest thing is he's giving up too much runs, too many runs. I mean, it's kind of like Tanaka from last year. He was a guy that was owned basically everywhere, but everyone was frustrated because he didn't provide what he did in 2016. And so people were hoping, you know, look, he had a hiccup last year. Maybe he'll come into this year and figure everything out. Yankees team's going to be better, you know, all that. But, yeah, he has 5 wins. But, I mean, he's given up 5 runs every start. And so he's a guy that I'm not looking to own. He's a guy I'm looking to sell if I can get anything for him. If not, I'm just going to end up dropping him.
For me, someone like Tanaka, who was so good in the playoffs but so bad during the regular season last year, someone who I feel rises to the occasion, but I feel like I can't trust him during the regular season because he's just shown for the last few years that it's not something that you really want to have in your possession. So for me, I think that he's someone who I'm likely considering dropping, depending on the league size. If it's obviously a 14 teams or larger, there's a good chance I hold him, but keep him benched and try to trade him. But this is someone that I really don't want a part of, because at any time I feel like he's going to give you a bad start. It's like Colin said, he gives up 5 runs every single time, and it's like, what do you have to do to actually have a decent start? You know, you could put him against the Marlins, let's say, and I feel like he'd still give up a couple runs. I feel like he'd give up some base hits. His strikeout rate is right around 8 strikeouts per 9, but his walk rate is a little higher than normal. His home run rate is basically where it was last year, and his BABIP was significantly lower than what it is last year, and his left on base is low too. So while his left on base may regress back towards his norm, obviously his BABIP is going to as well. And I still expect him to sit in like a 4.3 to 4.6 ERA for the year. And that's not someone who I really am excited about. And he's someone who I'm likely not looking to utilize in any fantasy format.
All right. For me, I think Tanaka, I mean, I get what you guys are saying, but I still think Tanaka is too good to simply drop. So I would knock him down to a stream / borderline start. So I guess stream if I have to pick one. But the problem is, like you said, that he's also so damn inconsistent that you don't necessarily know when the inconsistency is going to come and go and against who it's going to happen. But, I mean, 4.95 ERA, so the first thing I'm going to do is say, all right, maybe the BABIP's high. No, the BABIP's low. The BABIP's 243. Yeah, the xFIP is 387. But still, I mean, there's he has good stuff. We've seen him be successful. But I feel like he's just too talented and it's a risk that you have to take. And you're kind of, if you drafted Tanaka, you're kind of just stuck with Tanaka.
Yeah, and for the record, Ben, I think you said against Miami he'd give up a couple runs. He gave up 5 earlier in the year, so he's right in line.
Yeah, so like that's the thing. Like if you're streaming anybody, you're gonna say, "Oh, he's starting against Miami. I'm plugging him in there." But no, then Tanaka gives up 5 runs against Miami, so it's like almost there goes that argument. So you have to say, "All right, I'm just gonna play him against maybe everybody but the Red Sox and the Astros." But I mean, he was good in the playoffs last year, so you really just don't know. And there's, but it's like he's too good of a pitcher to have a 5 ERA.
Is it more name value or is he actually a good pitcher?
I think some of it's definitely name value. But I mean, when that splitter is working, he's a good pitcher.
I think the problem for him is he gets compared to like Yu Darvish and Daisuke Matsuzaka just because of where he came from, and you know, not necessarily a fault, but you know, he might not be the same as those guys, and you can't just compare them because, oh well, you know, imagine if we did that in America, if we said, okay, well, this guy was born in Nevada, so he's got to be good because Bryce Harper was born in Nevada. You know what yeah. I mean? It just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, they're completely different guys, and I think the name value is there because, yes, he makes a lot of money. Yes, he plays for the Yankees, but he hasn't shown it. He shows it in the playoffs, but that doesn't help us. We're fantasy players. It doesn't help us him to, you know, provide in the postseason. We need results in the regular season, and he's not giving that, so I'm dropping him.
Well, I mean, he did 2014 to 2016, so I think that's part of the other problem, too, is that we're looking for that again.
We're chasing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not something that I want to do, especially with a guy that hasn't shown it in over 2 years.
Yeah, well, I don't have him on any of my teams just because I didn't want to deal with, you know, kind of deal with this. And I feel like he was overvalued on draft day because of the name, like you said.
All right, Colin, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
I'm at CWeatherWax13. Right now I am doing a few podcasts. I'm a guest here on the Coon and Friends podcast. We also have the Push Accept podcast that we do about every other week. And then the Dirt Dogs podcast with Mike the Rotocop and Randy Haynes. And right now I am working on getting ready for the football season. I just started my first best ball draft, but still trying to make moves and make sure that I stay relevant in all of my baseball leagues.
Seems that you've become more of a staple than a fill-in for this show, by the way.
Just saying. Yeah.
Okay, I can say that.
What about you, Ray?
I am on Twitter at Ray_Kuhn_28. And like Colin, I'm getting ready for the football season. I signed up for my first MFL 10 the other day, and I'm also in my first Fantrax best ball draft of the season, kind of using these early best ball drafts as a way to get my bearings, organize my rankings, organize my thoughts. I mean, we know my thoughts could be a cloudy place to begin with. And obviously, I'm on the Kuhn and Friends podcast. Colin, I, and Mike Alexander are going to get together, I think, next week to do a football podcast, kind of like a best ball preview, summation of some free agency moves as we start to look towards that season, the NFL regular season. But we're definitely not forgetting about baseball. I mean, we still have 2/3 of the season left, so there's a lot of baseball left to be played, a lot of moves left to be made, and we're going to be here for you with it.
And I can be reached at BBrandsFWFB. You can continue to find me on the Kuhn and Friends podcast. You'll be able to find me as the host of the Push Accept podcast, along with Colin. We'll always have guest hosts on that show as well from Friends with Fantasy Benefits. So we're looking to try to get on as many different personalities as we can so we can get a lot of different insight on the trades. So feel free to send in trades there. You'll be able to find me during the offseason on the Friends with Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast with Eric Mackey. And from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.